Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Happy Wednesday to you. It is 9:08 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. Zach Renstrom is here from the Washington County Water Conservancy District. I remember, Zach, one of the first times I had Ron Thompson on, your predecessor, trying to say Washington County Water Conservancy District. It rolls off the tongue now. But back then, I was like, the I got it eventually.
It's a long name.
Yeah. Zach Renstrom's easier to say than Washington County Water Conservancy District. But Zach, thanks for coming on today. Good to talk to you.
It's always great to be here.
Carrie's here too. She looks lovely as always.
Yes.
And Carrie. She doesn't want me to turn her mic on, so I won't yet.
You were trying to hook her up on a date just a minute ago.
I know. Shame on me. Many years ago, this is way, way off topic. Many years ago, I was working in a wood shop. This would have been 35 years ago. My supervisor, a guy named Randy, and a girl I went to high school with, for whatever reason in my mind, I'm like, they would make a perfect match. I set them up. They have been married for 35, 36 years now.
Wow.
So, yeah. So now I think I'm a matchmaker. I'm not. I just got lucky, but yeah. I hope when they celebrate their anniversary, they go, that Andy guy, he was pretty cool. Probably not, but, yeah, that's all I did. Zach, I was just reading through an article, Salt Lake Tribune, written by Mark Eddington. I thought actually pretty fairly written, pretty well done. But it was, some of the quotes in there are based off of an appearance you made, a speech you gave, a talk you gave in Moab, right?
Yeah, so they have what's called the Great Salt Lake Collaborative. And so what that is it's made up of a bunch of reporters and also people from universities, and it's this collaborative. And so they focused a lot on the Great Salt Lake for a long time. And so they wanted to start talking about the Colorado River. And so they had a big event in Moab, and they invited me to go and talk. And it was kind of really just like, hey, tell us your opinion, or tell us some of the things that are going on in the Colorado River and how that may differ from the Great Salt Lake. And so I just kind of went off for an hour and told some stories and tried to describe the differences. even though we're in the same state as Utah, down here things are just different. We're a drier climate. Just our development's different.
A little bit hotter here too.
Especially this year. And so I just kind of went off, and it's one of those things. You have all these, half the room is full of court reporters, and they were all writing as fast as they could. And what came out of that is multiple articles. And so that was one of them, was in that Salt Lake Tribune article. And so, yeah.
I thought there were one or two that weren't real great, but I thought this one, Mark Eddington did a really good job talking about it. I wanted to go through a couple of things that were mentioned in here. One of the stories you told was how you were talking about water conservation with a developer, a home builder in the neighborhood, and his wife wasn't paying much attention. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'll let you pick the story up from there.
Yeah, so I'll keep it vague because I don't want this to get back. Well, they know I talk about it, but
it's
I don't want
people... in the trib online.
Yeah, but there's no names.
Okay. No, you're right.
So I have a friend that's a home builder, and he builds custom homes. Mm-hmm. And so he was, he's probably about, getting to the end of his 30s. Anyways, we're having a discussion, and he wants to continue to build homes. I mean, that's his profession, is building homes. He wants to continue that. He's built a really nice company, has several employees. And so his goal is to continue to build homes for, next 20 years of his life, if not 25 years. And he loves his job. And so we were talking about it. And his concern was, will there be enough water for me to have a job essentially in 5 years?
Yeah.
And so we were talking about all the things in detail. And his wife was standing there, was just out in the roadway. And his wife was just completely bored with this whole conversation. Yeah, she was on her phone texting.
She was elsewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. And it happens all the time. I was kind of going through what we were doing. I says, one thing we're looking at is conservation. And he's like, well, what do you mean? And I says, well, we're going to start paying people to remove their grass. Or I says, we'd rather do an incentive and go and say, hey, you can do whatever you want. But what we'll do is we'll offer you an incentive if you'd like to change. Unlike some areas, like in Las Vegas, they're actually changing it and mandating people about their grass. We want to do an incentive. And I says, and he's like, well, we just need to get people to tear out their, he was getting very aggressive in a certain area of saying, hey, we just have to force this on people. And I says, well, I guess we could rip out your grass. Force you to rip out your grass. And he has a big front lawn. And it was interesting because the wife stopped, looked up at me, and she looked at her husband, and she said, can I swear?
Sure.
Okay.
As long as you don't use that one word.
Oh, I don't know what that one word is. Yeah. Anyways.
Yes, you do.
She's like, well, I'll be damned if you rip out my grass so another Californian can move here.
Yeah.
And I thought it was such a good perspective on what our struggle is here. Is so, you know, they have young kids. They want some areas for their kids to recreate on.
Sure.
And they like the grass. But yet her husband's job is dependent on us having enough water moving forward. And so, like, just right in this little marriage, and they're happily married. They've got a wonderful marriage. They got a wonderful family. But kind of is this conflict that's just kind of throughout the community. And so
yeah.
I hear all the time people are like, well, Zach, just shut off the water and shut off this growth. Well, 30% of our economy and a lot more deals right with construction and growth. And so it is a struggle and it's a balance. My job is I'm not an elected leader. I am a bureaucrat.
And for better or worse, yeah, a bureaucrat.
And so I always say it is up to our elected leaders to make those determinations. Mm-hmm. And so that's your city councils, that's your mayor, that's the Utah State Legislature. And I go to them and say, you are elected by the people, we're a republic, so you tell me what you would like. If you guys want to build moratoriums, if you want to slow growth, what do you want? And our elected leaders in the state of Utah and our local city elected leaders have all said the same thing. We want to make sure that water is not an impediment to growth. We want to make sure we're allowed to do economic growth. And so that's what we're doing, is following that direction.
One of the numbers cited in this article says, okay, Washington County has about 200,000 people right now. Mm-hmm. They say in the next, I think it was a span of 30-something years, it will have 450,000 mm-hmm. or close to 500,000 people. And that scares a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it goes back to exactly what you were saying. You know, will there be enough water? Will the people in that marriage, you know, the one, I want grass for my kid to play on. The other guy says, nah, rip out everybody's grass so I can keep my job.
Yeah.
And that's quite a conflict, and it's not going away anytime soon, is it?
But I'll tell you what's interesting about this whole discussion. They were having the same discussion 100 years ago. I mean, 100 years ago, this community, I mean, we've always had water issues. There was always discussions about what to do with water. You know, some people that had water 100 years ago were very like, well, we don't want to change. We don't want to do anything different, or we don't want to pay for infrastructure. And so it's just a continuous discussion of how we handle water in Washington County and in the Western United States. And so it's just kind of a legacy that's continued to go on.
So let's talk about the pipeline. When you inherited the job, well, not inherited, but when you got the job to replace Ron Thompson, the plan was Lake Powell Pipeline. That was going to be the answer to the future of having water here in southern Utah. And by the way, we've talked about it many times, mm-hmm. misnamed. It's more like the Flaming Gorge Pipeline, but basically sure. the same deal. That seemed like that was going to be it. And then we've hit so many snags along mm-hmm. the way. And at this point, I think most people, and you have a better perspective than all of us, but most people are saying the Lake Powell Pipeline may never happen, or if it does, it's way down the road. So then you find yourself, okay, I'm Zach, I'm the water guy, I got to find an alternative, because who knows what, you know, who knows what's going to happen with Lake Powell Pipeline.
Yeah, so that's exactly what happened. life changes, and you just have to adapt to change and move on. When we realized Lake Powell Pipeline is not going to be built anytime in the near future, we had to adjust. And so we kind of went out and started looking at different options. And we looked at everything. I mean, we looked at maybe we can build a pipeline from other areas and kind of looked at the feasibility of those. We looked at new technology. We looked at, you know, drilling deep. We looked at all these different things. And so we came back with a 20-year plan. And the 20-year plan has several focuses in it that's very traditional, like, you know, just drilling some wells. But the key part of that is what we decided to do in conjunction with the cities. We work very closely with the cities. Is basically we're going to take our wastewater and send it through a ultra purification system. So we're allowed to reuse that water. And also we're going to start working on conservation. We're going to make sure the new homes we built are extremely water efficient. And on our older homes, we will not, of course, mandate anything or require them to do anything. So, but if they'd like to, we'll do rebates and incentives.
That works.
That will work for 20 years.
Okay. Okay. And then?
Well, my career is 15 years long. No, what'll happen is the same thing that's happened 100 years in the past, is the community gets together, and the community talks about their options, and they make a decision on how to proceed. And so there are some options that we are looking at. We're looking at newer technology, you know, in 20 years, hopefully maybe technology kicks on that might allow us to take some of our lower, really hot, tough to treat water because of the hot springs. You know, maybe it'll become more economically feasible to treat that, or even environmentally possible. You know, we have put in proposals to drill very, very deep into the ground, like a mile deep. Most wells are only about 800 to 1,000 feet deep. We're talking about going to 6 to 10,000 feet deep. Right now, technology-wise, that's astronomically expensive. I mean, it's just, it would be very, very hard and expensive. And so we're just trying to keep options open and look at it and see how we can proceed. And as we roll along, we'll just always try to continue to be, you know, moving ahead with what we could do in the future.
Did you have to, when you, it references a meeting with the Southern Utah Home Builders, did you have to explain to them, make them understand that water is a finite resource and that they've got to do something? They can't keep doing exactly what they've been doing for, you know, the last 40 years here.
So the home builders have been amazing, and I got to give them a shout out because they have been phenomenal through this whole process. Not only did they get involved, so they just didn't show up and complain or whine. They actually showed up and says, show us the data, show us the numbers. So they dove into it and they were just doing it, like they weren't getting paid by anybody. They were just doing it, you know, volunteer. And so we spent a lot of time with them going through everything, and they would talk about different scenarios and we talk about different options. And so they were phenomenal through the whole thing. Their whole thing is, you know, they don't like government regulation. They don't want government regulation. If you build a new home, there's books and books and books And so they were very reluctant. They were not excited about anything. But after they kind of sit down and looked at all the different options and what could happen, they agreed that they needed to be, I mean, they needed to make some improvements for water conservation, and they have been amazing. And that was the thing is once they sat down and realized that this is just not some, like, I'm not like coming after them about some nuisance thing. This is really is, hey, we need to make sure there's water so you guys can continue to build homes like my one neighbor in the future. And they realized that very quickly, and they have been amazing. And so
you actually didn't have to do a whole lot of convincing. You just had to show them, and they went, okay, we see.
Yeah, and part of my job is I just try to speak truth to people. And I know that's kind of a corny statement.
It sounds religious or something.
Yeah, but it's a lot of times I'm just like, here's the bucket of water we have, and we break it down. The home builders really broke down. They're like, okay, how much water's come from this area, like Snow Canyon? We have a lot of wells up in Snow Canyon. How much is coming out of Snow Canyon? And we show them all the data, and we explain what's going on. And so we're happy to go into that level of detail. Or if people just kind of want a general idea of what's going on, and we just try to be extremely transparent with every type of detail that we can. So if you want to go into the deep, deep nitty gritty, you can. But if you just want kind of like the Reader's Digest version, we try to give that too.
Okay, let's go over some things about water that maybe myths, maybe the truth. Let's talk about some of the water situations. I'm looking right on my screen right now. I have a picture of the oasis out there at Desert Color. Are things like oasis, that oasis or other big pools, are they big water users / wasters?
So it depends. And this is why, because sometimes you have to have big pools. So I'll say Sand Hollow Reservoir. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the largest pool of water in the county, but it serves a very, very vital function. Like, we have to have that pool. We have to have that lake sitting there. We have a lot of evaporation that comes up off that. And so you do have to have certain things like that. Over in Tokerville right now, we have a developer that's looking at doing some things. So we have a regulating pond there that kind of helps us run the system. And the developer came and said, hey, we'd like to expand this pool or this pond and put a trail around it and do some really cool things with it. Mm-hmm. I think that's a phenomenal idea because it's going to serve a vital function of being a regulating pond. But we can also incorporate it into some really cool recreational activities. And so sometimes when we look at pools of water, you might say, well, that's a waste. But if we can combine the two, that's a win-win.
Okay. What about golf courses. Let's talk about golf courses. I mean, we love our golf here in Southern Utah. Brand new, you know, out there in the desert is the PGA is coming, and it's almost sacrilegious to say golf courses, you know, are using too much water. And I know you have to be very careful. A lot of powerful, rich people who would have, you know, they would John the Baptist you, you know, if you said too much about. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I'm exaggerating, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So golf courses, though, notoriously use a lot of water, don't they?
They do, and one of the things that we're trying to do is help them use less water. So golf, I'm not a golfer. I get way too bored with golf. Sorry to all the golfers out there. But they use a lot of water, but they also bring in a lot of economic growth. And so people do come here to Southern Utah. They come here and golf, and so there's is an economic. I mean, this PGA Tour, I was in a meeting, and they were talking about the amount of money that's going to bring into Washington County. I mean, we're talking millions and millions and millions of dollars. And so it's, you know, you kind of look at the economics. And then, I mean, we have city parks that people like to go play soccer on. And so it's just kind of a balance. So mm-hmm. what we've asked is for our golf courses that we do have, let's try to make them as water efficient as possible. And so some golf courses are a little bit better than others, but we just try to reach out to them and say, hey, let's make a goal of trying to reduce your water use by 20% or 25%, but still have a very beautiful course. And so that's what we're trying to do with the golf courses right now is just work with them and try to make them as most water efficient as possible.
With things like with a golf course, maybe reducing the size of a fairway or even the greens and that kind of thing, would that do the trick then if they're looking for that 20% goal?
Yeah, so some places what they've done is they've actually give these golfers these little GPS trackers.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they do that for like 6 months, and then they go back and they see where people are going. And they're like, okay, all this other grass on the edges, people aren't even hardly walking on it. So let's rip out that grass on the side, and it should have minimum impact on the actual game. And so they're doing things like that. Or in some areas, they're just having like grass on like the green or the tee box or the putting green. Yeah. And then the rest of it's like more just desert. So you're mm-hmm. like hitting it in the dirt, like everything's a sand trap, I guess. So there's some things that they can do that be creative and look at different options. The goal is just say, okay, what can we do so people are still enjoying it, but trying to keep it as water efficient as possible. And so there was one golf course I saw where the green, is that right? Sorry, I'm not a golfer. Where they tee off?
The tee box.
Tee box. And then the putting green, that just was artificial green, turf.
Really?
But then the fairway was a really kind of like a rough grass. It was longer grass that used a lot less water.
Hmm.
And so is it the rough?
The rough is the area outside the actual okay. fairway.
Well, like it was all tall grass.
Okay.
In between it.
Yeah.
And so so that golf course used very little water because they just were using a type of grass that used less water. And yeah, so there's some really innovative things that they can do.
Now, how about swimming pools? We've talked about this in the past, but maybe if you can reiterate how important a cover is.
Yeah, so a open swimming pool uses about the same amount of water as grass does. Just kind of put it in your perspective.
Okay.
But if it's covered, it uses a fraction of that.
Hmm.
So, yeah, so we encourage people, and that's what we're doing right now, is encouraging people that, you know, when you're thinking about putting in a pool, if you can put a cover over it, it will save water. And I guess there's some other benefits. Apparently you use less chemicals and things like
right,
that.
Right,
so,
for sure.
So we encourage, they're like, hey, if you're going to put
warmer
in
warmer or cooler, depending on
yeah.
what season it is.
Yeah. So we're just like, if you're thinking about putting a pool in, really consider putting in one of those covers that covers the whole thing, because that is a water savings.
There's a family in my old neighborhood that had a splash pad in their backyard. They actually had a tall thing and water would come out of it and everything. Are those water abuser type things?
So it depends, once again. So if you go to a lot of the city parks, what those are is they have the water go through like a spray nozzle, then it goes in, and then it's kind of like a loop.
Hmm.
And so it's more like a swimming pool where they'll treat the water with a little bit of chlorine and have it just kind of go out in the kids. And so those are actually pretty water efficient. I mean, it uses some water, but it's a great recreation. Some of them, you know, you push a button and the water just comes out for like a minute and then it shuts off. Those are a little bit better. If it's if it's spray one where you just turn on the valve and it just runs and runs and runs, those are really water wasters. And so, so that's what we try to encourage with conservation. We're like, listen, we can have a lot of great things. We can have golf courses. We can have playgrounds around our schools. You know, you can have a lot of neat things. Just when you're designing it and laying out, let's think about it, about what we could do. So
what about the people like the board developer's wife who said, I'll be damned if I'm going to take my grass out so another Californian can move in. That, to me, Zach, that seems like actually a minority opinion. Yeah. We hear it, yes, but I think for the most part, most people are like, you know, they don't look at it that way. I'm going to rip my grass out for two reasons. Number one, I want to help save water. And number two, hey, you guys are going to pay me to do it.
Yeah.
I don't hear that many people saying, you know, I'm not going to do it because I don't want anybody else moving here.
So I think with her, and she's a very sweet, kind lady. I want to make sure if she's listening, I recognize that she's a wonderful person and she's not. Anyways, with her, it's more of just like, hey, let us show you what you could do. And so, obviously, they had four or five kids. Anyways, you could talk about doing some alternative design. So what you probably want is a long strip where you can kind of probably just throw a baseball back and forth or something like that, or kick a soccer ball. But maybe over here, you have grass in the corner that you're not using, but why don't you put it like a sandbox there that the kids could play in? And then over on this corner, you could do some other type of landscaping. And so instead of just having wall-to-wall grass from, you know, property line to property line, think about it a little bit more creatively about what you could do. And when you do those things, people see what you can really do. So in my house, my wife was adamant that she wanted a place in the front yard where she could stand and talk to the neighbors. And so I said, okay, I'll tell you what. Let's create a small little patch of grass that you can stand there. But I want to design it so it's flat, so there's not water runoff, and she didn't care about that. And then I says, I want to use a type of grass that's a warm desert grass. And so she's very happy. She got her little patch of grass. I'm happy because I only have to mow it like every 3 weeks, and it hardly uses any water. And so you just have to be kind of creative.
You're happy because happy wife means happy life, Zach.
Oh, yeah. And I want her to be happy.
Yeah, there you go. That's what we're talking about.
It's all right. No. All right. Oh, it's my anniversary in 2 days.
2 days, okay.
You just said that.
My son's birthday today, by the way. Happy birthday to AJ. Let's go to the phone line. Mike is hanging on, wants to talk to Zach about water. Mike, what's up?
Hey, just wondering. I just caught part of the program. I understand, though, as far as golf courses and parks and those type of things, in St. George especially, they are watered with reclaimed water that if they didn't use that, that water would just go down the Virgin River. Is that correct?
Yes. It depends, though. So in certain fields, we are using reclaimed water. And reclaimed water is sewer water that's been treated. And then we're using it on certain parks. And so our plan is to actually expand that. Some of the parks are using what we would call culinary-grade water. And so we're working with those parks that are using that high-quality water to try to switch over to a lower-quality water for those things. And so that is one of the things we're working on.
Are the golf courses using reclaimed water?
Not all of them. We have a couple that are, but the goal moving forward is the vast majority of them will.
Okay. All right. Hey, thank you,
Mike. Appreciate the call.
Good question.
Let's do this. Let's take a commercial break, and we'll have more with Zach. I want to ask, somebody posted online, Zach, that no matter what we do, Washington County was going to be out of water in 5 years, and we were all going to be very thirsty. So we're going to let Zach respond to that. I don't believe it's true, and I'm not really a conspiracy. I don't have a tinfoil hat or anything like that, but we'll talk about that when we come back. Right now, let's give away some tickets to Anastasia. Now, folks, I've read the review. I haven't seen Anastasia myself out at Tuacon, but I've read the reviews and I've talked to friends, word of mouth out there. This show is, let's see, what were the words we used, Stockton? Stellar, amazing, incredible, unforgettable,
spectacular.
Yeah, all the adjectives are out there with how cool this show is. So we're going to go ahead and let people call. What caller number do you want to shoot for?
Let's have it be the second caller.
Caller number two. Two tickets to Anastasia out at TuaCon. These are kind of floating tickets. What that means is you call and you pick your own seat. It's not an assigned seat. You just have two passes. You call them and say, hey, I want to go to Anastasia and see what kind of seats are, or even go to their website, see what kind of seats you can pick out. It's 673-5890, the phone number to call and get your tickets to Anastasia out at TuaCon. 673-5890.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
All right, congratulations to Annette. She won the two tickets to go see Anastasia out there at TuaCon. Zach, who is on the actual, the board, right? The board of, I don't know what it's called. What's the name of the board?
The board.
TuaCon board, whatever.
Yeah, the board of trustees.
It tells me that he's seen Anastasia, and it was stellar and amazing and spectacular and all those things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and so I when they go out and try to find the characters, boy, they just hit every single person.
They did it.
Oh, yeah, it was. So each person just fits their part just perfect, and the singing is just, yeah.
I have to say, so I've been to a couple of shows this year, Ring of Fire, indoors. Mm-hmm. First of all, maybe I'm spoiled and I need air conditioning. Maybe that's the reason why, but I loved Ring of Fire, the Johnny Cash story. Just to me, that was, they hit a home run with that one. And I don't know what happened where they had to change the lead character and then delay the, we actually had tickets for their first night, and so we had to trade those in and get some other tickets. But however they settled on a lead character, he is fantastic.
He is good.
And by the way, and I've talked to Stockton about this before, how those guys memorize all that stuff. I mean, you know, that one's I've Been Everywhere song where he names all those cities, and you know, they had a little cheat sheet on the screen at the end of the play where we could sing along. But the dude had it all memorized. I'm like, wow, that's impressive.
Well, a lot of those actors, he kind of fits that part. And so he goes all over the country singing those songs. And so they know him by heart.
Yeah. So. But still, that's a lot.
That is a lot.
So between the dialogue and all the songs, that's a lot of stuff. Zach, have you ever acted? Are you an actor?
Oh, no.
No.
I think I was a cowboy in the fifth grade in Oklahoma, and that was the extent.
You're running on yourself. You hear me? I'm quoting the play.
Oh, see, I don't even remember. I'm math, science, law kind of brain.
Okay. I was in high school. I wasn't an actor. I was a musician, and so I was actually in the orchestra pit for several of those plays. And one of them was Hello Dolly, and Oklahoma was one of them. And so by the end of the rehearsals, I practically had the play memorized myself because of that over and over and over and over again. At one point in the play Oklahoma, I am not a drummer. I am a saxophone player. Huh? Our drummer quit. He had other commitments. He couldn't come to rehearsal every day. And so they said, hey, Andy, why don't you move over to the drums? And I'm like, so they tried me one day on the drums, and they found someone else the next day. Yeah,
well,
because I'm not a drummer.
It's always good to try.
It was fun. I can play the bass drum, boom, boom, you know, but other than that,
I'll have to hear you play the sax someday.
Yeah, it's been a while.
That's a cool instrument. You should like,
Stockton was a sax player, too, back in the day. Barry sax. I like the big one. Yeah. So, and I love jazz music because of my saxophone background. So.
Yeah.
One of my favorite, and folks, you can look this up on YouTube. It's the song, I don't endorse the song. It's called Gloomy Sunday. They call it the Hungarian suicide song. So, but if you hear the Branford Marsalis version, saxophone version of Gloomy Sunday, it's one of my favorite pieces of music out there. So, Zach's going to write, you're going to write that down. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious now.
It's worth listening to. Branford Marsalis, Gloomy Sunday.
Okay.
You can find it on Spotify or YouTube or whatever you want. So, 941 on KDXU, we're talking water. Zach, I was on Facebook the other day, and unfortunately, I do get bombarded with some of the conspiracy stuff out there. And someone had written, and I'm not going to say their names, I know who it was, but someone had written, doesn't matter what Zach says or what we do, Washington County will be out of water in 5 years no matter what. What would be your response to that person who wrote that?
Listen, we ran out of water in this community a long time ago. Like in the 80s, we had built-in moratoriums. And so what we did is we got together and says, okay, with the water we have, how can we be better stewards of that water? And so if we come out and say in 5 years, say, hey, yeah, we're going to build more golf courses. We're just going to do all this stuff. We could be out of water in 5 years. There's no question about it. But if we come and say, no, we're going to be good stewards of the water, so our homes, the new homes, will be water efficient. We're going to do all these things. Then we'll have water for longer. And so it's just really, what do we want to do with a very, very limited resource in the desert? And so if we do it wisely and are good stewards, then we will have water. We have a plan that outlines 20 years, and it goes into detail. Like, it's just not saying 20 years. It goes into the water rights. It goes into the water analysis, the hydrology, the hydraulics. It goes through all those details. And so if our city leaders come back and say, hey, we want five more golf courses and certain things, we'd be out of water in 5 years, no question. But right now, our city leaders are saying, no, the limited amount of resource that we do have, we're going to use that wisely, and we're going to extend that out.
So the statement, no matter what we do, we're going to be out of water in 5 years, is not very fair at all.
No, it's not fair at all, because it just depends on what we do with it. And I mean,
like
I said, literally this community ran out of water multiple times in the past. And then they'd come back and they'd use technology. They'd become more water efficient. And they'd build water infrastructure projects to continue to extend what we do.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. Let's see, I think it is Jeff. Yeah, Jeff on line one. What's up, Jeff? How are you?
Hi, good morning, guys. How are you guys doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Good. Good. I wanted to piggyback off that comment you guys were talking about having grass versus a new move in from California.
Yeah.
I might not articulate it that way, but I think there's a decent sized kernel of truth in that statement. In my head, I use the term standard of living. And when you talk about conservation, in a way, you're basically asking for a reduction in your current standard of living, whether it's being able to wash your car, having a swimming pool, whatever. But there are communities, for example, in California, that have mandated one shower a week. So they've reduced their standard of living to one shower a week. Now, who is asking the big picture question, what are we, the people that are here, willing to reduce on our standard of living? How far are we willing to go? Because I see it as a mathematical issue. Conservation is a reduction in your standard of living. If you enjoy spraying the hose at your kids during a summer, hot summer day or whatever, you're reducing the way you live. But that doesn't mean conservation in principle is a bad thing. But I just see that equation, and I'm wondering who is asking those questions. How far are we willing to go?
Well put. Good question.
No, he's very smart to think about how it is a mathematical equation. And so, like with our water conservation, with our new city ordinances that the cities have all passed, we went to them and said, okay, let's talk about water. The new homes that are being built, this is what we can do. We could come in and you guys can come in and say zero grass. So like down in Las Vegas, they've come in and said zero grass.
On new homes.
On new homes.
Yeah.
In fact, down in Las Vegas, they're coming in and saying not only old homes are going to have to start mandating it. And so we reached out to our cities and said, what do you want? And they said, well, we want some grass. We want people to have flexibility of what they want to do. And so they put some limits and caps on how much grass you can have. So it's kind of that balance like he was talking about of where we're going to find that sweet spot. And that's where I really reach out to our elected leaders. And we went with and talked to them and said, what would you guys like to do here? And they says, well, we want people to have grass. We want people to have green yards. And I says, okay, we can do all that. And they says, we are adamantly opposed to low flow shower heads, which I am too.
Yeah.
And so we says, so we kind of showed them what the current building code is. And we talked through all those issues. And we kind of came back and says, okay, this is what we actually took a lot of them out to homes that have been built. And we said, look at this home. We'd show them pictures saying this home is using this much water. this home is using this much water, where would you like to? And our elected leaders came back and said, try to find that sweet spot. Because it could go the extreme far way, or it could go the other way. And we'll,
can I ask a,
yeah, please.
Can I ask a tinfoil hat question?
Sure.
If you have a community, mm-hmm. and we conserve water, mm-hmm. as a community, mm-hmm. and we say, look, the average of a household went from 3,000 a month, 3,000 gallons a month to 2,000 gallons a month, whatever mm-hmm. it is. Mm-hmm. By basically conserving and quote unquote reducing our standard of living, we replaced our lawns or took out our swimming pool, whatever. Can a builder take those numbers and say, look, the average household is only using 2,000 gallons of water. Mm-hmm. We can now build 2,000 units instead of 1,500 units. Isn't it true that our sacrifice, the people that are here, their sacrifice of their reduction of water usage or their standard of living would benefit a builder when a builder comes in and says, I can build 2,000 units because they only use 2,000 gallons of water a month? Isn't it in fact benefiting development at the cost of the people that are already here?
So the freed up water through conservation will be allowing us to go and use it for additional growth. There's no question about that.
So there's an equation of reduction of our lifestyle to the benefit of development. Yeah.
Well, the only thing that I push back is that I don't think you have to have a reduction of lifestyle. So what they're kind of coming out and saying, hey, so if you live here,
I'm sure the city council in California about one shower a week is probably saying the same thing. No,
but they actually had the same conversation here in Washington County, in St. George. If you go back 120 years ago, they had the same discussion about, hey, a typical home in St. George is using this much water. If we go and line this and do these things and use less water, that's going to allow us to grow. And so that discussion has been going on for 140 plus years. Now, what we're saying is if you live here today and you have grass and everything, no one is going to mandate you to make any changes. Like, no one's coming in and saying you have to change, you have to do this. It's saying, hey, if you live here and you have this, you can keep doing exactly what you want to do. But if you want to change, there's incentives for you to do so. So there's no mandate. It does free up water, and it does allow us to continue to grow. The other thing with that is, you know, I have three kids, and I want them to live around here. And so we do have Californians moving here. There's no question about that. But we also have, I think the last time I heard, like 30,000 or 35,000 kids in our elementary schools, mm-hmm. or grade schools right now. And so part of it is just our own growth. And so there is this big balance of how do you do that. I've had people come to me and say, well, we should just ban people from out of state moving here. Hmm. And I say, well, that would solve the problem a little ways, but we still continue to have kids. And so
we got our own kids. Yeah.
But everything the caller is saying is absolutely true and is a good balance. And so the question is how to reach that balance. And that's where I go to your city council meeting, and I go to a lot of them and just say, what do you guys want to do? Like, even today, I have a meeting with all the mayors and all the city managers, and we're going to be talking about these very issues today. It's a public meeting. Anybody's welcome to attend. We'll talk about some of these things and what to do.
All right. Got to interrupt
good,
you, too.
Good questions.
Yeah, great questions. Got to get a commercial break in. More with Zach Renstrom right after this.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back to you and Zach. Hi, Zach.
Hey.
Thanks for coming.
I like these philosophical questions. Yeah.
I mean, we were talking with Carrie during the break. It's one of those deals, like, there's not really a right answer. There's not really an answer. It's many answers. And do you like having fancy restaurants to eat in? Well, they wouldn't be here if we hadn't grown to 100,000 in St. George, 200,000 in the county. That's kind of, you know, you want to talk quality of life. Well, do you like going to your favorite restaurant? Would that restaurant be here if we weren't as big as we are? You know, quality of life.
I lived before I moved here in some areas that actually had depopulation, and mm-hmm. And all the kids, it's tough because I just saw how they were kind of crumbling.
Yeah.
And that's not the answer. But on the flip side, on the growth side, I mean, my favorite trail, my wife and I would always used to go run it. We'd never see anybody. And now this weekend, there'll be 50 to 100 people on our trail.
Yeah.
And that, anyways, it's so I get both sides.
Yeah,
and I have three kids, so I can't really talk about population growth either.
That's right. I had five, and actually, most of them have moved away. So, and that's, you know, that's a whole other issue with property values and the price of a home and stuff. And I'd love for all my kids to be here, my grandkids to be here in town, but at least currently is not realistic. I want to change the topic for a second. I want to talk about artificial turf. We're participating in the flip blitz right now. We're getting rid of our grass that we only use to mow on basically, and so I'm on board. I believe in it, but we went on to a couple of their Facebook pages for just about anything. A couple of the Facebook pages were landscaping your yard, and 90% of the people were like, "Don't put artificial turf in. It's so hot. You're gonna hate it." I've heard there's artificial turf that isn't that hot, but maybe it's more expensive. What are your thoughts on all that?
So it comes back to just designing it. So I actually have artificial turf at my house.
Mm-hmm.
It's in our backyard, so the house shades it in the afternoon. So for us, because we kind of thought about it, in the afternoon it's shaded and it's actually quite pleasant. My kids are out there kicking the ball on it. There are some that are more expensive that you can, and I don't know how it does it, but it kind of reflects the heat a little bit. Or you can put some shade trees around it and stuff like that. And so I just encourage people, just don't do the quick and easy thing. Spend some time thinking about it. There's some great landscape architects that can kind of come out and kind of think about where the sun's hitting and how it's going to come down, so they could put a good shade tree that would shade the artificial turf.
And this is an issue for us because it is on the west side. It is in the sun in the afternoon. So this is an area we need to think a lot about.
Yeah.
So.
No, a good landscape architect or good landscaping goes a long ways. And seriously, people go up to our desert garden up there on the by the Dixie Rock and walk through there a lot when they're building new homes because they can see what trees will look like at maturity or at different stages, and then you can kind of think about that and how that would, kind of balance out things to have some green areas.
By the way, we do have some artificial turf in our backyard, which is shaded in the evenings, and I don't think it gets any hotter than anywhere else.
No.
Just like you, I wouldn't walk on it barefoot, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, but I wouldn't walk on my concrete barefoot at 1 o'clock in the afternoon either. That's a little too hot. So yeah, definitely need to be cautious. We did the artificial turf in our backyard by ourselves.
Oh.
And we followed, I think, all the properties of sand and leveling and all that stuff. And it looks pretty good, but I feel like in the front yard where it's kind of the gateway to our house, we want it to look really good, but also to not be that hot.
So. Yeah.
And I'll have Zach over and Carrie to design a yard for me.
No. You don't want an engineer to do that. We have some landscape architects. We put on classes that people can go, and we have a couple of really skilled people that can talk about all the things you're talking about. So if people come in and say, "Well, I'm looking for landscaping that's really kid friendly," they'll give them all suggestions. If you're like, "I'm looking for very easy landscaping for maintenance," there's this. So there's just instead of just going to that standard boring stuff, it really is, if you can get a little bit creative, there's some really cool things, and it's very beautiful.
Nice. We did not get an update. Chief Toker Reservoir, how far along are we, and what's the target date?
So the target date is to build it. Well, it'll take 2 years in construction, and so we have the complete foundation built. And so now we're just in the next phase of trying to get everything finalized so we can start building the actual dam itself. Once we initiate those bids, it'll probably take about 2 years to build because you have to build them in a very specific way. So hopefully in about 3 to 4 years, people will be able to recreate on it.
Will that affect Ash Creek Reservoir then? Will Ash Creek still fill up and empty out on very erratic basis?
Yeah, it will. But we will try to bring that water down as fast as we can.
Very good. All right, we're out of time, Zach.
Hey, thanks.
Went fast, didn't it?
It did. Always does.
Thanks for coming on. Andy Griffin Show here on KDXU, 9 o'clock every morning. Thanks for listening.